The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. This is the ZabeCast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go! Here we go! Monday, August 10, 2026. Good to be back in the home studio on the monogamous compound in Western Northern Virginia. How you doing, everybody? Welcome, welcome, welcome. Man, we got a lot to talk about today, and Andy Poland makes a return to the podcast. He's been up in Vermont for the week, staying at his friend's place, even though his wife doesn't join him there. It's an interesting arrangement. I'm going to recap it again with Andy, because I just want to highlight it to everyone out there that there are a million different arrangements people have with friends and family members, and you don't always have to conform to what is the most expected sort of, well, if you're going to go here, you got to bring so-and-so. You'd cut this thing any way you want in life. So we'll talk to Andy about the Hall of Fame weekend, the Adam Vinatieri speech in which he ripped Belichick, the real problem with the Hall of Fame, as well as the devastating injury to newly minted new contract left tackle stud Laremy Tunsil of Andy's Washington Commanders. Plus some thoughts on the Bills' new stadium, which has a few things you're like, really? Really? We're still doing this in 2026. But before we get to all that, I figured I know one story Andy is going to not want to touch with a 10-foot pole. And I don't really want to go back there on the WNBA because it's a rump league that had lived in complete obscurity forever, just steadily losing money for the NBA itself. And so nobody talked about it until Caitlin Clark arrived. And now there's a lot of eyeballs. There's a lot of media on them. And unfortunately, the WNBA is proving to be utterly incapable of even resembling a serious league. The latest is this clothesline of Sophie Cunningham of the Indiana Fever. It's a hard foul. It's a classic wood nap, as my boy Naki likes to call it. DeJounte Carrington, who used to be on the Fever, saw that Sophie was going in for an uncontested layup, went to go contest it, and because women don't jump very high, she jumped high enough to be able to yoink, rake her arm straight across Sophie's face and knock her to the ground. Cunningham was not injured, but could have been. It was a dirty foul deemed a flagrant, then upgraded to a flagrant two, then she got kicked out of the game. Okay, so far, whatever. Need I tell you that DeJounte is black, and of course, Sophie is white. She is the so-called MAGA Barbie of the WNBA. Afterwards, in the locker room, on Blue Sky, DeJounte Carrington tweeted out in all caps, "White privilege!" This league has completely lost the plot. No, it was not white privilege. It was a hard foul, a flagrant two, and an ejection. You're reading, you're implying, and you're putting too much into this. And it's just, it's a bad look for the league. Because anyone who might want to be into the WNBA gets turned off by this shit. So, as if that wasn't bad enough, after the game, Stephanie White, the head coach of the Fever, actually defended DeJounte Carrington by basically saying, well, you know, we understand she's going to play very hard. It's what she does. I want to play this for you, and then you can judge for yourself. But here was Stephanie White, head coach of the Fever, after the game.
One of the things about May is that she's going to play her butt off, man. She's going to compete. Nobody's going to go walking in for a layup. And so I don't oppose the hard foul. But I also don't think that she intentionally went for the net.
She's going to play her butt off, man. You're not going to get an easy layup on Joni.
One of the things about Nay is that she's going to play
Nay.
Her butt off, man. She's going to compete. Nobody's going to go walking now, in for a layup. And so
right there, look at Caitlin Clark sitting there just burying her head in her hands going, oh, God, here goes our dipshit coach.
I don't oppose the hard foul.
I don't oppose the hard foul. No, you should say that was crap. This has no place in our league or in basketball, and she better watch her neck next time we're playing them.
But I also don't think that she intentionally went for the net.
Okay. Well, what do you mean by you don't think she, quote, intentionally went for the neck? Imagine if you are Caitlin Clark or Sophie Cunningham, and you've got to take orders from this woman. You've got to know that she is the one leading your team. Of course, there's bigger problems that are now looming for the WNBA because of this whole, you know, transgender eligibility kerfuffle that has arisen. There's two guys now, two ex-NBA players, Enes Kanter Freedom, that's his real new name. He added Freedom to the end, and Royce White, who have said publicly they're going to declare for next year's WNBA draft. Now, the WNBA has scheduled a meeting in New York City to discuss the matter further. Somebody had the best tweet about this saying, a league meeting to determine what the first word in the league name actually means. Yeah, let's have a meeting about this. I did read somewhere that because the league is headquartered in New York, that there are pretty strict anti-discrimination laws. And so if both White and Kanter follow through and declare for the draft and they are not drafted, then they would have a pretty strong case like, hey, we're being discriminated against, which means the league has a couple of choices here and they're all kind of bad. One would be to let them in, have somebody draft them and watch them dominate. The other one would be to just not draft them and hope it goes away, which could spur further legal action. The third would be to finally admit, yeah, we if you were born a man, you can't play in the WNBA. They can't just put on a wig or say you identify as, you actually have to have been born as a biological female, which would be something. I don't know how much further this is going to go. But it's got a momentum to it where now you think, the league's going to have to figure out what the hell they're doing. But, yeah, that's the WNBA. Somebody tweeted this as well. Caitlin Clark is literally the worst thing that ever happened to the WNBA. She put eyes on a sport that didn't have anyone paying attention to the fact that its players are fucking morons and its commissioner is even fucking dumber. They were better off in obscurity. I would disagree with that in this one and only regard. Eyeballs and attention are king in today's attention economy. This is all good. The fact I'm talking about the league is still good for the league, even if it is a clown show, even if it is a racially poisoned mean girls club. Any talk, any exposure, controversy, any mainstreaming of the league is ultimately good for the league, because you can mop up any language about who's eligible to play or not play. You can come down with more serious suspensions for players that commit flagrant fouls. But it's hard to get the eyeballs. Once you get the eyeballs, you can trim the other stuff and you can dial that down. And I don't know, maybe the league will make a buck in my lifetime. Maybe it'll stand alone on its own and make a dollar. Who knows? I know this. We've all missed a flight at one point in our life. And yeah, it sucks. It is the ultimate case of FOMO. In fact, it's not even FOMO because it's not fear of missing out. It is actually missing out. You are now simultaneously incredibly inconvenienced. You are embarrassed. You are a little bit panicked, and you may be out more money if you have to book a flight on your own dime. Depends on what kind of ticket you have and where you're going and everything else. So missing a flight is traumatic. I understand that. But you just can't chase the plane down on the tarmac and yell for it to stop. That story actually happened over the weekend and went viral. And I've checked it. Like, this looks too good to be true, but nope, there it is. Let me show you the video here just in case you were wondering, wait, I didn't see this story. What happened now? Well, what happened was two women missed their flight. The plane had boarded, pushed away from the gate. This was at Moscow's Sheremetyevo International. Here are the two passengers who had missed their flight and decided they're going to run onto the tarmac and just walk directly towards their Aeroflat aircraft in an attempt to board. There they are. One of them has a roller bag, both in high heels, are probably high-end Russian prostitutes. They've got to make their way to Belgrade for a big appointment with some high rollers. And the plane is being pushed by the I don't want to call it the tow truck or the tug or whatever it is. And the guy's on the radio, hold on. We have two bimbos here on the runway trying to get on the plane. Now, somebody went into a detailed explanation as to why this would have never worked. Okay. And as if you needed actually an explanation as to why it wouldn't work, here it is. Boarding closes around 20 minutes before final departure because of a document known as the load sheet. Final passengers, bag count, fuel count, cargo position, all feed a weight and balance calculation that sets the aircraft's trim for takeoff. The captain signs it. Adding two adults and a suitcase, and the signed math is wrong. Reopening the door means disarming it first because the closed cabin door is armed with an evacuation slide that deploys in seconds if handled wrong, which triggers a five-figure repack bill and cancels the flight outright. Then you need a stair bridge or a gate to be brought back to, a new load sheet, and a new pushback slot from ground control. That 20-minute delay ripples through every leg of this aircraft's day of flying, and a short-haul A320 flies four or six of them a day. By the way, all of this at this point for these women, they're probably saying, and? Well, you could. This plane was already under tow. However, during pushback, the tug driver owns the aircraft. Brakes are released and the pilots are not steering. A wing walker watches clearances. Two pedestrians in the tow path forces an immediate full stop, which is exactly what this crew did. And it's the only correct move in the book. They got within 20 feet of the fuselage. In every way that actually decides who flies, they were further from boarding than they had been at check-in. That's great, but do you think women know all this? And even if a woman knew all this, do you think she cares? Do you think that matters to them? No, it's me, I, got to get on the flight. I see the plane right there. Why can't I get on? Need I recap the time I missed a flight by sitting at a bagel shop table at Reagan National, no more than 100 feet away from the gate, and not knowing they closed the door 10 minutes prior to the listed departure time? Yeah, that happened to me. The announcements were only made over a small, localized kind of speaker. And I went over to the bagel shop to sit down and eat. I kept checking my watch, and I'm like, I got time. I don't care if I'm the last one boarding. It doesn't matter to me. I don't have a bunch of luggage I got to put up top. I just got a backpack. Okay, we're 10 minutes prior. Let me mosey 100 feet over here. And I couldn't see. I was obstructed my view to the gate. Well, when I got there and I saw the door closed, holy shit, I went into a full-blown panic. Sir, 10 minutes prior is the actual cutoff time. I didn't know that. Check our terms of carriage, sir, blah, blah, blah. The plane had yet to push back, but the door was closed. And I'm like, can't you open the door? No, couldn't even open the door to go, oh, one more guy. Boy, was that humiliating. I had to stand in line at the podium. And I go, oh, I missed my flight. A couple hours later, I was finally in Vegas, going to Vegas for that flight. Probably saved me some money that I would have lost at the tables. So yeah, it sucks missing a flight. Hell, I almost missed a flight by sleeping through deboarding. No lie. I was asleep upon landing on the window seat. And by the time I woke up, the plane was fully empty and the cleaning crew was coming through. And I'm like, did anyone think to maybe wake me up? Just saying. So that was unnerving. And as it would happen, my last flight last week when I was flying from Reagan to Milwaukee, I'm sitting there at the gate and I see a young girl, not maybe like too young to be kind of alone, maybe, but I guess she was a young traveler. She might have been 19, 20, might be early college age. And she comes walking from around the corner in the gate area, face a complete melted, blubbering mess, hooded sweatshirt, tears running down her face, no shoes on, and she's holding her phone, looking into it. She's like, and her first words were to her parents, I missed my flight, because I'm sure she had been dead asleep, sitting there in one of the chairs waiting to take off. And all I could think about was, sweetheart, while this is no doubt traumatic for you right now, this is one of the great life lessons that you will never repeat. You're going to be fine. You're going to get on a later flight. It's going to be all right. But you will never forget what it feels like. And so therefore, you will be more hup, hup, paid attention when it comes to making sure you're at the gate well ahead of time and following all the announcements. By the way, also didn't know, I almost missed a flight once by not knowing that they could make a flight delayed. Say your flight is now 30 minutes delayed and then undelay it. And then be like, oh no, it's actually on time now. I've seen flights go delayed, back to sort of delayed, back to more delayed, back to, oh, never mind, it's on time again. So yeah. If you're ever not at the airport yet and you get like a longer delay, like an hour plus delay, oh, your flight's delayed for an hour and a half. Don't just say, well, I'm not going to go to the airport now. I got time. You might, or you might not. Oh, the joys of travel. All right, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a blackjack guy. Always have been. It's the one casino game where your decisions actually matter. Hit or stand, double down, split. You're not just watching a slot machine and hoping for the best. MyBookie.ag has live dealer blackjack. Real person, on camera, dealing cards in real time. And a full casino beyond that. Roulette, crap, slots, poker, all of it right on your phone. New players get $25 in casino credit just for making a first deposit. Use promo code ZABE. Go try the tables on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart. Get paid.
Time now for my man, Andy Paulin.
All right, I want to be careful not to come off as mocking you for this, because I legitimately am not. But can you explain to us one more time your wonderful arrangement with your friend with a cottage up in Vermont that you use and stay at every year?
Yeah, well, I have a friend going back to when I was 8 years old, and one of my best friends in life, and his
What's
family.
Let's make him famous. Come on.
Well, he's since passed away. He died 5 years ago of ALS, very tragically. His name was Robbie Byers. And in fact, as we use this technology, we can tip a cap to him because he wrote the patent on the original iPhone. He was brilliant. He had a PhD from Stanford, and he had a law degree, and he had an MBA, and he went and became a patent attorney and wrote the patent for the first iPhone, but sadly passed away. I've been very close to the family, and they continue to invite me up. They seem to like having me there, so I go every year. It's paradise. It's right on a reservoir.
Fantastic. Who's still with the family? Is his widow still part of it?
She's remarried. She lives in Colorado. He's got two sons, and one of them was there this year. His sister, I'm close with. She comes with her husband and her three sons. One of them's engaged, and her 95-year-old or soon to be 95-year-old mother, who I pick up on the way. She lives in Pennsylvania. So I pick her up, we drive up, and drop her off on the way back.
Up.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's about 8 hours.
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah.
That is amazing. So it's actually some new people in the mix because not only is your friend passed away, but his wife is now remarried. She doesn't come. So it's the kids and other satellite members of the family. And you were like the indispensable. Well, we got to invite Andy. He's probably got some great Redskin stories about Sonny Jurgensen. Let's go.
No, they're not really sports fans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What do you do? Magic tricks? Do you cook? Are you like the expert canoer up there? Why?
Well, as I've told you before, maybe much to your chagrin, people kind of like me. They like
I'm a pleasant
me around.
Fella. They obviously do. And congratulations to you for being an easy house guest who does not annoy, does not ask for things, probably is nice and tidy, probably doesn't snore, doesn't clog toilets.
Right? I have my own room, and I help out with, I do some cooking and I clean up the dishes with others. You know, everybody pitches in. It's a really nice week. They have a party boat, which we go out on for either an early morning cruise or a happy hour cruise. You know, it's nice.
That is great. Andy, that is a testament to you. You should be very proud, number one. And number two is that I just wanted to highlight to people again, there are a million different arrangements in life for things that are unconventional, but if they work, they work. So keep your mind open to these possibilities, because I think a lot of us fall into the sort of the mindset of, well, here's how it's supposed to be. Like, we got a place. It's got to be family. Can't be anybody else. It could be anybody you want. And you're that other guy. You're like the stray cat who showed up and now they keep feeding it milk and you're not going to leave.
Well, I first went up there in 1971. When we were 12 years old, gone multiple summers. And then his two boys are the same age as my two kids. Wow. So it worked out great. We taught them all to water ski together and things like that. It was great fun. And now they're all grown up. And in my case, my kids have kids. So it's, life moving on.
Yeah. What if you asked to invite your son and his wife?
They've been invited. They've been invited.
Okay.
His sister is wonderful. She believes in the more the merrier. So it's great.
That's great. Did you go fishing?
I don't fish. No, I did a few times, but you put the worm on, and they do have fish in the reservoir. The reservoir is stocked. So, sitting out there.
Andy, I teed you up for this. You have a classic line.
Jews don't fish, I know.
Dang!
But actually, they do.
They do.
Off like a big boat sometimes. But sitting on the bank or sitting in a rowboat out in the middle of a reservoir waiting for a fish that you if you're going to catch
it. That may or may not come. Yeah.
Yeah. And are you really going to clean it or are you just going to throw it back? You know?
Right. Some people do throw it back. They just want the thrill of pulling something out of the water and just seeing how big it is and the fight and the excitement of, oh, there's a fish on the line.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've retired from fishing. I've retired from snow skiing because fishing doesn't resonate with me. It resonates with my brother big time. He loves it more than anything. I always just think, well, I'm fishing. I could be golfing right now. because to me, it's every extra minute I'll be golfing somewhere. And as far as the snow skiing, it's just if I get hurt snow skiing, that takes away from golf season. So there's kind of no point to that anymore.
Right. And I can't water ski anymore because of my back. But at one time, I was a pretty avid water skier.
Avid. Okay.
Yeah, I could get up on one ski and all that. Yeah, it was pretty good.
All right, so we're passing the usual milestones of the summer, Andy. The Hall of Fame weekend has come and gone, and the talk of the weekend was Adam Vinatieri's induction speech. He is only the third kicker, only the third standalone kicker. Let me put it that way. Lou Groza, Lou the Toe Groza, also played offensive line. And I think defensive tackle as well. But, you know, Pat Summerall obviously played other positions than just kicker. So there's guys in the Hall of Fame that kicked, but there's...
I don't think Summerall's in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he is as a player.
Fine, yeah. But I'm just thinking some other guys that might have made it. Do you know the other two guys that are the only other two standalone kickers?
One of them is Jan Stenerud.
Ding!
And the other one is, I believe, Morten Andersen.
Yes.
Am I correct?
Yeah. Yes. Morten Andersen and Jan Stenerud. Okay. Before I get into the speech, question. Do you think the Hall of Fame should have more kickers in it?
I don't think there are any others that you could really make a case for.
Three in 50 years?
Well, I mean, what others do you think deserve to be in the Hall of Fame?
I don't know. No Redskins, that is for sure. Not
Mark Mosley.
Not Ali Haji Sheik. Mosley won MVP in 83.
Exactly. He won MVP, but he was like a 65% career kicker. We love him. He was great during those glory years. He had one of the most famous kicks where he won a game to send the Redskins to the playoffs as the snow was falling and he was embraced by Joe Theismann. You know, that's great stuff, but in terms of career numbers, is he a Hall of Famer? I don't know.
Not only was he embraced by Theismann, he jumped into Theismann's arms and wrapped his legs around Theismann's waist. And that's just a little weird, if you ask me.
You sure? Call up the picture. It might be the other way around.
What? It really?
He might be right. I haven't looked at that picture for a while, but I think it might have been Theismann jumping in Mosley's arms, which would seem to be more in tune with the way Theismann was.
That Theismann was very 1982, 9 seconds left, falling snow. Let me get this. Let me call this up for you here. Hold on. Stand by. Share video. Okay. All right. Can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So here it is.
So send him in.
He'll try to win it for his club. The 30-second clock goes down to 8, and now they stop. 9 seconds left on the game clock.
Does that sound like Charlie Jones to you?
I don't think it was an NBC game. He was NBC.
There were 8 seconds left on the 30-second clock.
Could be Jack Buck.
The Redskins call a timeout, and they'll either win or lose. We're the next step
it's Buck. I think it's Jack Buck.
And, of course, they're trying to clinch a spot in the Super Bowl tournament. The Giants, on the other hand, with a record of 3.
Is on CBS. All right, so CBS. So you're saying that's Jack Buck?
I think so.
Okay. By the way, I believe Mosley, with this kick, extended his streak, which was then a record of consecutive kicks made, to like 23 or 24. Yeah. And that has long since been obliterated, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Making the playoffs. So what a drop.
God, look at Theismann's muddy jersey right
there. I miss the mud. I miss that a lot.
And of course, you got two single bar face masks. The most insane thing ever, which is now illegal in the NFL.
Well, kickers, you can understand it.
Sure. Right. Sure you can.
Effort this will be. 42-yard try with Theismann holding. You think it'll be a fake? Hey. 9 seconds.
Nobody had frozen the kicker yet then, remember? I think that was years down the road.
42-yard try. And they need a good snap by Bostic. It's good. And the kick is good. and the Redskins there. The lane with four.
There yep. It is right there. Okay.
Theismann jumped in his arms.
Oh, no way.
Look at it again.
2-yard try. And they need a good snap.
Theismann's got the muddy jersey, so watch.
And the kick okay. is good, and the Redskins have the lead.
Yeah. There it is. God damn it, Andy. You are so good on this little nuance stuff. Amazing.
That's all I got.
Okay, so I agree it'd be hard to argue maybe who should or should not be in. Morton Anderson was not that good of a kicker. Vinatieri was really good and made the hardest kick in league history in the Snow Bowl game against the Raiders.
And the Tuck Rule game.
Kick, the Tuck Rule game. In fact, he made two kicks. One to, I guess, send it. Did it go to overtime? They made the game winner?
Yeah. One to send it to overtime. And that was the big, that was like 45 yards in the snow. The one that won it was 20 something. But that one kick to send it into overtime where they had to clear out a little, path for him to kick it on. They couldn't use the, snow blower that remember the,
get this kick up. This
one. Yeah. Here, hold on. Let's take a look, at the Vinatieri kick to tie the game in this. What a game that was, by the way, the Tuck Rule game. And it was a Saturday night, as I recall. It did a
first
huge
night
rating.
Game.
First night
first
game.
First playoff night game.
Right. Okay, you got that there?
45-yard attempt.
45.
That's Vinatieri's luck from this distance of late.
This is the Patriots season.
This is the Patriots season on the line. The kick is away. It is. Good.
I mean, that's incredible because it was so low, he knew he couldn't get a big plant on his approach. He'd slip and fall. So he just kind of pooched it.
This is the Patriots season on the line. The kick is away. It is. Good.
In fact, I'm looking at the guy that caught the ball over the crossbar. He did fall down. Take a look.
Good.
This guy right there.
Yeah.
Down he goes.
You know, I was working with Mel Kiper then, and we did a show the day after, and I came in and he said, that's the greatest kick in the history of the NFL. And I go, that's hyperbole and that's recency. But years later, you would probably say it is.
Yeah.
Right?
And then he won the Super Bowl with an indoor kick. It was close to 50 yards, I believe. It might have been 52 yards in New Orleans following that to win the Super Bowl. He made another game-winning kick against Carolina in the Super Bowl, and he was also highly accurate for most of his career, even though, when he went to the Colts, it kind of tailed off just a bit. Okay, fine. But this was him going scorched earth on Bill Belichick, who did not attend his induction ceremony and was not there for reasons that maybe we'll find out in a little bit. Part of it might be that he felt that he was snubbed himself, Belichick, and he's like, well, fuck it, I'm not showing up, even though the kicker that helped deliver two rings to me is going in. He probably should go there as a courtesy, as an honorific, right, to be there? A coach?
Yeah, well, here's something that I was talking about this before I went on vacation. You know who he chose to be his inductor?
Carly Ursay Gordon.
Yeah, right. Okay, now, he did spend more years. He spent 14 years with the Colts and only 10 with the Patriots. I was surprised by that.
About 24 years.
But in my mind's eye, he's that guy who just made the kick we went through in the snow. That's the kick that put him in the Hall of Fame. I think I would have gone with somebody from the Patriots. It may be that he's still pissed off that they cut him. I don't know.
Yeah, possibly so. But it's the NFL. People get cut. Get over it.
Yeah.
Here he was going scorched earth on Belichick.
I would repeat those last few statements about Coach Bill Belichick as well.
Thank you for demanding excellence every single day.
Your preparation, discipline, and attention to detail shaped far more than my football career.
Unfortunately, Bill couldn't make it here today. There's a lot going on at UNC right now.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
He may be on a recruiting trip right now looking for the next Lawrence Taylor.
I thought it was because training camp had already started. But in truth, it's because he's judging his girlfriend's cheerleading competition.
Oh! Okay, got your zinger in. Let's move on. Oh, wait a minute. He's not moving on.
All jokes aside. In my opinion, Bill is the greatest.
I would repeat
those last.
Oh, he went further. I don't know why this clip doesn't have.
Yeah, he said he was the greatest coach. Look, he was going for these one-liners, and he loves Peyton Manning, and he said thank you to Peyton for allowing us to use your forehead as a video screen, you know, things like okay. that. He had some jokes.
He also talked about the only person who loved holding my balls more than McAfee, his punter, was his wife. So yeah. There was that. I mean, okay, was Vinatieri out of bounds in his induction speech? Should an induction speech to Canton aim for the highest orbit of class?
I don't know. I mean, you know what's gone by the wayside is the time limit. At one point, it was supposed to be like 5 minutes. Then it got out of hand with guys like Emmett Smith going like 40 minutes. And now they're back to half an hour on these things. I think that's more.
Really?
Yeah.
Half an hour per speech?
Not per speech. Some of them stayed within the parameters. Drew Brees went like 26 minutes, something like that.
It's too long.
Too long, and there's just too much stuff in there. Thank the people you want to thank and get off. I'll tell you what, it has to be far more troubling for the NFL is Roger Craig talking about his dementia and whether that may or may not be related to football. They don't want to deal with that. That is something that the NFL does not want to hear, especially during Hall of Fame weekend.
Boy, you are really on this football causes dementia thing.
I don't know still if it does it. Or not, but the point is here's a player who has it and is saying he's uncertain whether football caused it.
Well, of course he's saying he's uncertain. He wants to leave open the door setting, for a payment. By the way, Roger Craig is 66 years old.
Understood.
People get dementia when they're in their 60s and 70s.
They do. But I'm just saying in that setting, did he need to say it there?
Oh, yeah. I think that was not ideal. Right. For sure. Also, right. Was Roger Craig truly a Hall of Famer?
That's another one. Yeah.
He was a well-known and well-liked member, a very memorable part of the early Niners dynasty. And he was, at his prime, a bitch. He was a great combination runner and pass catcher. But was he Hall of Fame? Seems like he's kind of on the outside. More important is the fact that the whole process is jacked up beyond belief, that Belichick should have been in this one, but the media blowhards who thought they needed to send a message decided to make him wait a year. I want to be into the Hall of Fame, Andy. I can't, though, with how these idiots are allowed to screw up the process. And the fact that they have these grab bags of, okay, here's five names, three regulars, one senior division, one coach. Good luck, pick two out of three, and don't tell us until you've agreed until you come out of the room. This is how you get weird halls of fames and induction ceremonies.
And guys slip through the cracks, and who knows what it takes to get them back into vision. But I know I talked to the late John Clayton when Joe Jacoby missed on his last chance to make it with the regular committee. And he said, we talked to the senior committee people, and they said, well, if you don't induct him, we will. Well, here it is, 7 or 8 years later after his last chance to get in, and he still can't make it. And it's crazy because Gary Myers was responsible for making the presentation for Joe when he was among the nine a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And he had, I don't know how many more people you can have. He had Lawrence Taylor. He had Bill Parcells and he had Howie Long all say this guy should be a Hall of Famer. What else do you need?
Yeah. Currently, the candidates nominated by the coaches Blue Ribbon Committee, along with the contributors Blue Ribbon Committee and the seniors Blue Ribbon Committee, land in the same bucket and compete with each other. Holy shit. Look at all these committees. Like, for example, this year, Belichick with contributor Robert Kraft and senior players Roger Craig, Ken Anderson, and LC Greenwood created a five-candidate menu from which the 50 voters picked three. To get in, the candidate had to appear on 80% of the ballots. And the candidates alone didn't receive a stand-up or stand-down vote. If Belichick had gotten one of those, he surely would be getting a bronze bust this weekend.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, first of all, he's the only coach with six rings. And you're telling me he's not a Hall of Famer?
Right. No, I mean, no matter if he is dating a child, you know, instructor, and he's, you know, got things going on where maybe he and Lombardi were doing some shady stuff in North Carolina. It doesn't matter. It's, was he a Hall of Fame coach? Fuck yeah, he was. He was the modern Lombardi, for better or for worse.
They're not going to remove OJ from the Hall of Fame. And they put in Lawrence Taylor, and, you know, off the field, there were some funky things that went on. And it's only a consideration of what you did as a player between the white lines. That's it.
Yeah. Florio's post about this is good. He said the fact that Belichick was omitted makes the entire process look bad. And it highlights the need for a different set of rules for getting in. And the Hall of Fame should have realized the moment that Belichick didn't get in at least 40 votes that something was very, very wrong. That should have been enough for someone to sound the alarm and to intervene before all hell broke loose in a way that did irreparable damage to the Hall of Fame's reputation, which in turn, says Florio, tarnishes the shield. Even though Goodell insists after the Belichick debacle, well, the NFL doesn't control the Hall of Fame, it's hardly a passive observer, points out Florio. Goodell is the most powerful man in the sport at any level, and he's on the board of directors. Seven other owners are on the board of directors of the Hall of Fame. If they aren't exercising enough influence to prevent embarrassing results, writes Florio, they should be. At Friday's meeting to sort this out, hopefully they will. Amen to Florio, and I don't say that very often.
Look, the whole Hall of Fame thing, this happened in baseball when Pete Rose was banned for life in 1989 before his time for eligibility for the Hall of Fame had come up. Bart Giamatti was asked, well, what about the Hall of Fame? And he goes, well, we don't control the Hall of Fame. I'll be interested in how you guys vote, all the sports writers that were there. In the next year, before Rose became eligible, the Hall of Fame passed a rule that nobody could be considered for the Hall of Fame if they were banned from baseball. You don't think baseball had some influence on that? You don't think the commissioner's office had influence with the Hall of Fame saying, oh, if you put Pete Rose in, it's going to make us look really stupid? Don't you think that happened?
I would think so. But yeah, it's just totally messed up. And the fact that there are guys on the Pro Football Hall of Fame committee who pay their own way to fly to the annual meeting at the Super Bowl tells you all you should need to know, that they are desperate to hang on to that as a career honorific so that they can maybe get employed by somebody. Shouldn't be the way it is. All right. Next year, by the way, class of 27, Gronk, Big Ben, Adrian Peterson, Richard Sherman, Cam Newton, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Andrew Whitworth, Alex Mack, Gerald McCoy, and Eric Weddle. Well, the bottom three, forget it. Let me go this. Gronk, probably no. Big Ben, of course. Peterson, of course. Sherman, probably no. Cam Newton, same. Antonio Brown, hell no. Le'Veon Bell, hell no. And Andrew Whitworth, I'm not qualified to judge linemen. I'm just a fan.
Gronk's going in. He's going to go in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you agree with me, though? Big Ben, yes. Peterson, yes. Sherman,
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
No.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cam? What about Cam?
No.
Okay. No. All right. No. To the Commanders, brutal injury news on Saturday. Newly minted left tackle with a new contract. Laremy Tunsil pulls his tricep muscle while practicing one-on-one drills. That injury is typically 4 to 5 months at a minimum, which puts his return at best in late December. He was going to help protect the blind side of Jaden Daniels in what is hopefully going to be a bounce-back season after a bad sophomore campaign. How gutted do you feel, Andy, about this injury?
It's bad, and I don't know all the hand-wringing of what you could do to prevent it. I don't know what you can do. They don't hit very much in camp anymore. This was like one of the few days they could do it. It's the game of football. It's next man up. It happens. You know what can you do? What can you say about it other than you hope he gets back before the end of the year?
Does this argue for more action in the preseason by starters under the guise of, hey, man, these injuries could happen at any time, so we still need to get the reps and get sharp for week one? Or does it argue for even less?
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know either. It's an interesting debate about, well, since they can happen anytime, how much more risk are you actually introducing with some, you know, two or three series per preseason game to get your starters sharp? I don't know. Nobody knows.
Yeah, and I think that the preseason games, all they are moneymakers. For example, the Commanders are going to have a practice against the Dolphins on Wednesday, and then they're going to play a game on Friday. What's going to happen is the starters are going to play much more significantly against the Dolphins in the practice than they will in the actual game. But they charge season ticket holders money to go there, and the game is going to be on television. And
yes,
the television money is what they want.
Yeah. Don't forget, preseason games are also practice for everybody else, Andy, which is,
you know,
the officials, the game ops guys, the stadium ops guys, the people making the hot dogs and the bratwurst and the nachos. They need to get prepped up as well, iron out the kinks. So there's some value in that. And you're going to have future bread truck drivers bragging, hey, man, I was in the league for a hot second. Look at this highlight of me in the preseason.
Yeah, now they can show it on their phones.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you used to be able to lie about it. Now, yeah. Oh, yeah? Show me some proof. Yeah. Right here. Look at this.
Are you excited for Stephon Diggs now that he's been signed to a one-year deal for the Commanders?
Excited? I don't know. I mean, he was sitting out there on the shelf for months.
Right.
And they went into the store, and it's like going into a gas station, and you're hungry, and you see a Slim Jim, but it's got 3 inches of dust on it. Yeah, but I like Slim Jim, so let me just dust off the Slim Jim, and I'm going to eat it.
And the shelf life of beef jerky is pretty long, so chances are it's okay.
Yeah, and he may be okay, too, or he may not be. I don't know. And he's also, as far as I know, has he ever been a number two as a receiver?
Not specifically. I don't think so, no.
Yeah, and so he's going to be number two to Terry McLaurin. How's that going to work? Yeah. Is that going to be okay?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Are you excited to go get a Posse 2 t-shirt, Andy? Talk about way too early. Somebody has come out with a graphic calling McLaurin, Diggs, and Antonio Williams, their rookie, the Posse 2.
By the way, what I've seen is he's unlikely to wear 18, and he could wear 7, which
no,
I don't think.
No, 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 no. That's the number of the quarterback of my youth.
I know.
Joe Theismann.
He's given out once before to Dwayne Haskins.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
it has Scott, even though Theismann was not real happy about it when they did.
Well, they painted him into a corner. What's he going to do? They were forcing him to be a jerk, and he wasn't going to do it. I don't blame him. Yeah. But I would look. Larry Brown is not in the Hall of Fame either. They haven't given out 43. I'd like to see 7 out of circulation. Charlie Taylor's 42 has not been given out. I think that needs to be the next retired number. And at some point, they got to think about Russ Grimm, 68. He's in the Hall of Fame, and his number's not retired.
Yeah. How do you like the now new permanent throwback Redskins-style jerseys and pants with the new taco holder Commander's W helmet?
Like it. And are we moving in a direction of seeing the spear on the helmet permanently?
We're getting closer and closer, aren't we?
We're not going
up to it.
They're not going to be Redskins again. So cool your jets on that. And I can't imagine that they will have the same logo that they had for 40 years. I don't see that.
Do you see where our boy Riggo flashed the inside of his red jacket at camp, showing a true Redskins logo, the old Blackie Wetzel design?
Not only that.
The team posted it.
Yeah, they posted it on their website, the team website, which was interesting. But I know this for a fact, they are embracing history. And when John Riggins played in Washington, he was a Redskin. You can't run away from that.
Yeah.
And you know, that's, I think, guys who played for the team when they were the Redskins should be identified as such.
Do you know the best way to steal a boat that's not yours at the dock? You just sort of walk up and down on the dock. Like you're just like, eh, eh, eh. And then at the last minute, once it's untied, you just step onto the boat and then you drive it away. That's what hopefully the Harris Group is doing with the name return. They're just, yeah, we're just walking up and down the docks. Oh, yeah, we do have the old jerseys and pants templates, but, you know, we're not going to use the logo. Yoink! Now we're on the boat. Huh?
But the name's not coming back.
You keep saying that.
It's not happening.
All right. Finally, this story has you written all over it. 73-year-old substitute teacher Lewis Kalb has gone viral after paying nearly $22,000 in a charity auction with the Phillies to broadcast an inning of baseball. He was actually pretty good. I want to play a clip and then get your reaction.
Get him under him to get the ups he needed.
Here in the top of the third, Painter from the belt delivers, and that pitch is high and inside. And now the count runs out to 2-1.
Okay, your thoughts, Andy?
Well, he's 73, so he's not looking to start a career doing this. The other thing is, 73. They're not hiring 73-year-old announcers unless he wants to go to A ball and if that. The other thing is, he doesn't have his own broadcast voice. What he's doing is imitating the broadcast voices that he's heard, which is why when they put a guy doing Major League Baseball, he's done a lot of baseball before. I don't think there was a case of somebody who hasn't broadcast baseball before becoming a baseball announcer. So it was fun, you know, and got some attention.
A decent sort of imitation of what he's heard all these years with that typical baseball rhythm of the ebbs and the flows and the rises and the falls of his inflection. And of course, a little touch of the puke voice. And here's Castellano, and he'll be at the plate trying to get out of his slump right now. 1-1, and it's low and away for ball two. You know, Dave Dombrowski once told me about the game of baseball.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what he was doing. And and it was fine because it was a one off. But I'll tell you this, Howie Rose, who's great and has been the Mets announcer for many years. When he first started, Bob Murphy, who was one of the original Mets announcers when they came into baseball in 1960, did not like Howie because Howie had not paid his dues in the minor leagues. And Bob was resentful of that. But the thing about Howie was he knew more about the Mets and still does than anybody else who's ever lived. He's seen almost every game they ever played, and he's great and had done enough baseball that he stepped in and sounded great from the beginning. But Murphy didn't like the fact he didn't pay his dues. That was a big sticking point.
Really?
There.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it also points out, and I mean no offense to those who are in the bigs calling games. It's not that hard. It isn't.
But it's something that is a skill that's developed. You just don't walk in and say, well, I've watched a lot of baseball and listened to a lot of games on the radio. You know, like, I've flown a lot. I watch movies about airplane pilots.
No, that's the difference. Flying a plane is actually very difficult. It has a ton of specific things you have to know about and has real stakes if you fuck up. This is just calling a baseball game, and it moves so slow. You got time to fill in things, and especially when you're on TV, which this guy was, you can, you know, use the television as a crutch.
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes there's a play that involves knowing the rules and bang-bang plays that you know, you have to be more descriptive of.
Some are better than others, for sure. And good for this guy. He's done a billion interviews I've seen on the web, gone viral after this. Don't think for a second that even though he's 73, he wouldn't take a job somehow. People are going, give this man a job. Listen to how good he is. He doesn't have a career path at this age. Somebody else had a great post, Andy, that said, it was $22,000. It might have been the cheapest half inning of baseball anyone's ever paid for. Because if you try to make the major leagues as an announcer, first of all, good luck. It's statistically harder than making it as a player because there's fewer jobs and the jobs don't turn over until a guy dies or there's scandal. Pretty rare, right? And you have to start out at low A ball and you have to sell your own
sponsorship packages, knocking on doors to hair salons and Subway shops. You have to work the TARP crew. You have to work PR. I mean, it's crazy the grind you have to go through. And you may get all the way up to AAA, the edge of the bigs, Andy, and stall and grind away for 20 more years, making $45,000 a year doing all this stuff and never make it to the bigs.
Well, I got one more story like this. You know Gary Thorne, who did baseball and hockey and other sports on ESPN for many years.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lawyer, successful lawyer in Maine.
Didn't know that.
And owned either outright or was part owner of a minor league team in Maine. They didn't do radio. And he said, I'd like to do that. So he started doing their games and he accumulated some tapes. The Mets had an opening for the number two guy with Bob Murphy. He sent the tape and he got the job. So
really,
if you'd like to become an announcer, buy the team.
Right. That would definitely help. And then one more. You saw where the Akron Zips have a contest where you could win the chance to be the offensive coordinator for the first drive of the game, to call the plays for the first drive.
Well, you could script them. You could script the plays. You're not like if your quarterback gets sacked. You know, you're not going to run the play that, you know, you decide. It's going to be scripted, but they'll have options. So,
okay.
But I did think of you and your claim that you could be an offensive coordinator. And the reason, you know, the reason they did this is to sell season tickets. Everybody who bought season tickets was put into a lottery.
Right. Here's how the contest works. If you buy a season ticket for their football suite, so it's an expensive ticket, then you have a chance. Barstool's Big Cat, Dan Katz, purchased 8 Akron season tickets. Bobby Bones, a nationally syndicated radio personality, bought some. Dan Dockich bought some as well. A bunch of fans of their first opponent have been buying it to try to sabotage the first drive, to call like fullback dive, fullback dive, fullback dive. It's a brilliant thing. They thought that 1 million impressions on social media would be a successful response to the campaign. It's gone way beyond that.
Right. Yeah. So it proves that there are a lot of people like you watching games that I call plays. Yeah.
I told you, give me a year of immersive training, I'd be average. Because any given play on any given day has a 50-50 shot of working.
Oh, yeah. When they draw up a play, it's designed to go for a touchdown. If everybody gets blocked properly,
right,
it's a touchdown. It just doesn't always work that way.
Right. And even if you're calling stupid, illogical plays based on down and distance, the other team is assuming there's a logic and a intelligence to your play calling. So they may not have the right defense for your wackadoo play call that made no sense on 3rd and 9.
Yeah. Well, look, this is college football. They need money. A program like Akron needs money. So if they have to do this wacky minor league baseball promotion, they're going to do it. And you're going to see more of it.
Everybody needs money, Andy. That's why they call it money. Money. Great line from Danny DeVito in the movie Heist.
No, it was Easy Money, wasn't it?
Easy Money. Okay.
Everybody needs money. That's why they call it money.
Was it?
I'll find that bite and I'll drop it in. Andy, we did great work here. It's great to have you back in the DMV. We passed another milestone. You had a wonderful week in Vermont with your friends and their family. And we'll survive the loss of Laramie Tunsil. They will not play with 11 guys. They will play for 10 guys. They'll have a replacement. And there'll be a marginal drop-off, but still, it'll be fun.
I've heard that. Next Man Up, I think, is the name of a best-selling book by the late, great John Feinstein.
John Feinstein. All right, very good. Andy, as always, a pleasure, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Guys,
let's end on some emails. I always love your feedback, zabe@yahoo.com. Jay Bendlin replies regarding my comments from last week in which I said, man, when has Elon Musk ever missed? He said, I know you're a bit of an Elon fanboy, and I'm not against it, but here's a list off the top of my head.
Elon has failed to deliver on his promises in the following. Full self-driving, 6 or 7 years behind. Tesla semi-truck, only a decade behind on that one. Robo-taxi fleet, only 6 or 7 years behind on that one. Tesla Roadster, only 7 or 8 years behind on that one. Ask the people who put down the $250,000 deposit how that went. Starship missions, again, about a decade. There's also been ones about the Boring Company and others. He's accomplished more individually, yes, than most countries have, but he constantly overpromises and underdelivers, which most fanboys will not acknowledge. Thanks, sincerely, Jay Bendlin. Jay, I can't argue with any of that. I don't know about the timelines. I don't know how you're scoring this as well by saying that he's failed to deliver on self-driving cars when he was 6 years late. Like, okay. I do understand that he hypes things. And I do understand he has stuff that fails. That's actually good. Anyone who is an innovator and is pushing the envelope is going to fail. You need to fail. You need to find out what doesn't work. But a lot of these things are going to resolve probably in his company's favor. Some of them will be a bust, for sure. So maybe I should walk back that he never fails. He does. But I'm just saying that what he's doing, what he has already done, is so incredible that I would, generally speaking, not bet against him. You may win in terms of, well, it took 6 more years than we thought, or, well, it's not quite what he had promised before. But holy shit, the innovation, the stuff going on, and now he has such amazing scale to play with, not just financially with the SpaceX IPO. And forget what the stock is at this moment. I know it crashed hard after about a week or so from the IPO, which is not unusual. But he has such amazing cash at his disposal now that he can buy things up to further broaden this interconnected empire of not just satellite internet service that is now being leveraged on airplanes. And anyone who's taken a flight that has Starlink on it for internet, oh, they're like, oh my God, this is great. Amazing. I've got Starlink, and thank God, because I live off the grid out in the country where we don't have cable, don't have fiber. Maybe someday, probably not. And that has been revolutionary for me, and I can now get streaming internet TV on 7 different TVs and not have any glitches. The Tesla that I drive now, the Model 3, I'm like, I never wanted a Tesla. I never thought like, oh, I need to get a Tesla. I scoffed at electric cars. I openly, if you recall from my show with Scott and Sally on the first team on Fox, I openly mocked the idea that we would see self-driving cars in our lifetime. I said, driving's too complicated. There's always weird things that happen, you know, a cone that's in the road or a guy standing there waiting to cross. And then what if this lane goes down? And there's too many weird little nooks and patterns and traffic. Son of a bitch, the self-driving in my Tesla keeps getting more and more amazing all the time because it's scaling up its own capabilities by feeding the information into his central computers to learn and learn and learn. So I'll amend that. I am a fanboy, and I'm obviously, I know that he misses on some things. Somebody else said I could do without his politics. Okay. Like what specifically? His style of politics, his stances on things. We could argue he failed on Doge because the budget is worse than ever following all that. Look, Doge did not, it started out gangbusters. They fired a bunch of people. They reduced a bunch of departments. But you are going against a federal behemoth, a leviathan of sorts. And so therefore, you're only going to make so much headway. And eventually the giant is going to shrug you off, which is what it did with Doge. Okay, to some elite tweets. I don't know how I got hooked into these with my algorithm. You might have heard some of them. There could be professional writers in a room somewhere hunkered down going, well, you need to write some elite tweets. Either way, these are in that category. From Dad Jokes, there comes an age where you don't care how you look in photos anymore. You just want to look good in MRIs, ultrasounds, and CT scans. I agree. I'm at that age now, although I don't mind looking good in a photo. This one, whoever came up with lefty-loosey, righty-tighty, huh, absolutely knocked that out of the park. Hard to forget, right? This one from the account Introvert Problems. The older I get, the more I realize that one of life's greatest luxuries is having absolutely nothing planned and nobody expecting you to be anywhere. This one from another account, sort of a non-important account. My body keeps telling me to stop drinking beers, but I'm not going to listen to a retard. Old Salty Marine has this hashtag elite tweets. This black guy at work asked me where the color printer was. I'm like, buddy, it's 2026. You can use whatever printer you want. And then there's this, some wise wisdom on girlfriends. Quote, having a girlfriend is like raising a child. You have to plan activities to keep her entertained so she doesn't get bored and then ruin your life for fun. All right. Thanks for listening. As always, rate and review. The official sports betting partner of this podcast is MyBookie. Make sure you use promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to unlock any and all promotions. And of course, wager responsibly, people. Thanks for listening. We are off and running this week as we get closer to football. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag and why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.